Welcome back to CannaWeek, brought to you by New Frontier Data, where we deliver the week's top headlines in cannabis and hear experts weigh in on the impacts these stories are having on the industry. I'm your host, Heather Wickline. Okay, this episode, we are going to be talking about regulatory challenges and the outlook for the vape industry. Our first guest is the chairman of the ISO, International Standards Committee of Vaping Products, and chairman of the CEN, European Standards Committee on Vape Products, and currently serves as co-founder and CEO of the Blink Group. Please welcome Arnaud Dumas-Durelli. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Heather. Thank you for having me.
Of course. And our next guest is our in-house expert. He serves as Chief Knowledge Officer here at New Frontier Data. Please welcome Mr. John Cadilla.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Arnaud, before we get started, would you mind giving our listeners a quick rundown on the Blink Group and who you are for anybody that's not familiar?
Sure. Well, the Blink Group has been around since 2017. And basically, the inception of the Blink Group was to bring all the years of expertise we had in nicotine vaping to the cannabis industry. There were a lot of products on the market, and a lot of people were coming to us and saying, hey, what do you think of this product? And looking at initially really was the viscosity of cannabis oil and understanding the vaporization process and the mathematical model of vaporization, because it's not really vapor, it's aerosol generation. We quickly realized that the materials that were being used were materials that we used in the vaping industry a couple of years back and that weren't at all suited for that kind of viscosity. That is why, I don't know if you remember, in the early days, a lot of the cartridges were turning black after using them halfway, because essentially that black came from carcinogenic substances and the terpenes were burning, the cotton wicks were burning. So we decided to create the Blink Group to specifically address that problem and bring all of those years of knowledge into the aerosol generation process to cannabis. Now, throughout the past 12 years now, we've all been involved on the management team in the vaping industry. And I had the chance of being nominated to be chairman of the ISO standards on vaping products, but also chairman of the European Commission standards on vaping products. So really heavily involved on all three main continents. So here in North America, in Europe, and in Asia, because most of the manufacturing, I would say 98% of the manufacturing of these products happens in China. So that is really how we created the Blink Group, and most importantly, to address any potential safety issues as well by controlling the entire supply chain.
Well, thank you for that. Well, we're honored to have you on because you are the expert. All right, well, we have a lot to cover, so we're going to dive right in. MJ Biz Daily reported Oregon recalls vape products over out-of-state cannabis terpenes. So the Oregon Liquor Control Commission, OLCC, regulates the state's licensed recreational marijuana market. They issued a mandatory recall on vaping products sold under the Naked Extracts and Native labels. And these products allegedly contained cannabis-derived terpenes imported from California and the use of marijuana-derived ingredients, including terpenes, sourced from non-OLCC licensed businesses is prohibited under Oregon law and OLCC rules. So Arnaud, the regulations we just touched on in Oregon seem pretty strict for vaping products. Would you say that this is the norm?
I think there's a lot more scrutiny on vaping products ever since the vaping crisis, obviously, and the vitamin E acetate being the culprit. But I think we need to dial this a little bit back and understand why this happened. And yes, vitamin E acetate was added mostly from black market companies. But why was it added? It wasn't added to make these products more dangerous. It was added because there is simply no such thing as a vaporization grade product. We know there is a product that's approved for cutaneous use, so on the skin. Why? Because there are a whole bunch of levels of derms that will filter out any and most bad products. We know that certain products are approved for ingestion because you have enzymes in your body that will break down some of those bad byproducts. For inhalation, we don't have any data and there is no vapology grade category yet. So understanding that and understanding that vitamin E acetate has been approved for ingestion and has been approved for skin use, for topical use. I mean, these players, whether they're black market or not, I mean, don't have the research to say, hey, it's going to be dangerous if it goes into your lungs. So I think that's really the first thing you have to understand about vitamin E acetate is, yes, it is dangerous for your lungs, but that was only found out afterwards. It wasn't completely established. Now, one of the other things that we're seeing because specifically of this is that there is a lot of lack of research. And a lot of these states that are trying to implement new regulations about either additives, terpenes, whether they're coming from the plant itself or whether they're botanical terpenes or even synthetic terpenes, there is just no research. So all of these decisions on the regulatory side are really made arbitrarily. And I spend a lot of time with a lot of the licensed producers, a lot of the multi-state operators, trying to get them to understand that as producers of these products, you need to show good stewardship and you need to do research on this. We're trying to do as much research as we can, but we're only the hardware provider. Can you imagine that we're providing a medical or quote unquote medical device that has no valid testing procedures that we're allowed to do because we don't have a cannabis license? So all of the testing that we do for any product has to be tested with our clients' oils, and we can show any kind of previous testing. We just don't know if it'll react the same way because every oil is different. So adding and banning some of these terpenes because they're from out of state, I think is the lowest thing on the priority. Right now, what the states should be doing is giving grants and giving out some more research licenses for the industry and consumers and public health advocates to be able to do research specifically on these products.
I mean, you are preaching to the choir. New Frontier Data was born out of the lack of research and data in cannabis industry. So, John, you're the head of our research team. What do you have to add to that?
You know, the vape market, I think, is a really elegant illustration of the challenge that the cannabis industry writ large is having in terms of the industry's innovation is moving at breakneck pace. And both the science and the policymakers are struggling to keep up with these changes. And in many cases, you know, because this is such a brave new world, you know, we're demolecularizing cannabis and reconstituting in ways that have never been done before. We're innovating new delivery mechanisms that have never existed before and combining those with compounds that have never been used for that type of delivery mechanism. Arnaud's illustration of vitamin E acetate is something that was well established for other applications, and one would think, okay, maybe it probably makes sense to try it for vaping. You know, you can see the train of thought that gets you to having vitamin E in vape cartridges. But because there wasn't a lot of undergirding science, you end up having the vape crisis and now much more scrutiny on the industry. This is going to be an ongoing tension, I think, for a long time to come. Even as we finally get to a point of stability within the vape market, I think it's going to affect other aspects of the cannabis industry where regulations on science are going to continue to lag behind the pace of innovation in this space. But broadly speaking, to Arnaud's point, I think once we figure out some of these broad strokes, what are some of the fundamentals in terms of either what kinds of compounds are clearly demonstrably safe or clearly demonstrably unsafe, and those lines get more broadly drawn? Two, once we start to see some stability in terms of where the innovation takes us into where the next threshold of vape products are going to be, as with most technologies, you tend to have these cycles of innovation where you have a major leap in the technology, a period of stabilization before you have your next major leap. And I think we're probably getting fairly close, and Arnaud, I'd love your perspective on this, but fairly close to our next point of plateau, which will give us just the dust a chance to settle, us a chance to understand how these products are affecting human physiology, understanding how the mixing and matching of these compounds are performing in the devices. And hopefully that will help kind of lead to more sensible regulations and draw attention away from things like, you know, where are these terpenes being drawn from, given that we broadly believe that the terpenes are safe since they're consumed in so many other forms, and focus more on how do you ensure that the legal regulated market is providing the safest product possible. And that is being done in an intensely science-led way. We're not there yet, and there's going to be a lot more capital needed to be channeled toward research in order to get us there. But you know, I think this is a critical time for the industry to be having that conversation.
It definitely is. I mean, if you make the parallel with nicotine vaping, look at nicotine vaping in the U.S. It's been demonized. Why everywhere else in the world is it considered 95% more safer and less harmful? We're talking about harm reduction here. I used to say this in my nicotine vaping days, and people hated it when I said it. I said, hey, do you want to have 150,000 people die because of tobacco at the end of the year, or only 20,000 die because of vaping? I'm sorry, that's already a huge step forward. And it is. I'm being thought provocative here because we're heading down that path. You look at Europe, I received a couple of months ago, €65 from French Social Security because I switched from smoking to vaping, because France has embraced the harm reduction of vaping. In the US, we're banning flavors, for instance, on nicotine vapes. Why are we banning flavors? Simply because there's a whole group of lobbyists that say they attract kids. But if you look at the consumption habits, over 95% of users, adult users, are vaping because they're specifically vaping flavors. I quit smoking in 2009. My favorite flavor is strawberry. My second favorite flavor is mango. There's no way I'm going back to tobacco flavor because it's just disgusting. So you see that inflection point as you're talking about is going to be really based in science. And my entire goal of everything I say and everything we do as a company is to make sure that we don't fall in the same rabbit holes that nicotine vaping did. Because, I mean, you can see where it is right now. No more flavors. Everything has to be channeled through certain distribution channels. No more free market. No more innovation. Hell, you can't even put out a new product since August 8th, 2016. So all the products that you see on the market right now, if they're legal, of course, are products that have been around for a while back and that haven't been made safer or couldn't be made safer because of regulation. So really, I'm really hoping to see more money channeled through research instead of spending all that amount of money on getting beautiful packaging out there from a lot of the players.
You make a really important point. And I actually think as we think about the emergence of the global cannabis vape market, maybe even about cannabis more broadly. Certainly, one of the tensions that I think we're going to see between the European markets and the North American ones and the US market specifically is the difference in kind of policy orientation to how cannabis gets integrated into our society. So, you know, generally the Europeans tend to be much more pragmatic in their approach to public policy. So, which is why you tend to see so much of European policy more focused on harm reduction. It's, you know, when Portugal started doing needle exchanges, 20 years ago, most of the rest of the world, certainly the Americans, thought it was crazy, but there was clear science supporting that kind of decision. Whereas generally, you know, there's still a lot of both stigma and conservatism that is driving American public policy. And so the reflex tends to be much more around how do you build as many constraints around this market? Because even if we will grudgingly make it legal, but if we have to make it legal, we've got to put some really, really tight bounds around it. And unfortunately, not only does that help quell innovation, it undercuts some of the harm reduction opportunities because you know the unregulated market options end up being either competitive or being able to stay viable because the legal market really isn't fully able to come into its fore. I think that's a tension we're likely to see for at least a couple more years in the US relative to the EU. But over time, I think that is going to erode, particularly as the science becomes more affirmative.
Yeah, it's this kind of cross that we see. I mean, I say it by experience in the nicotine vaping world. The US was the new El Dorado for nicotine vaping because all of these brands were popping up. People were making things in their garage, but were innovating. And as they reeled in more cash, they were getting better and safer and all of that. You can't do that in Europe. But at one point, the paths crossed and Europe understood the science, whereas the US got away from science. I was in a meeting with the FDA with the former FDA commissioner, where I put on desk about 100 pieces of research on nicotine vaping. This was back in 2016. And the only answer was, yeah, well, that's what happens in European lungs. I'm like, why? Are my lungs different than yours? I mean, you can, just by that comment, you can understand the rationale.
I mean, we're all the same species, right? We're all human.
Some are just not human than others, apparently.
That is unbelievable. Well, moving on, I want to get your kind of just a little bit more of an outlook, because as you touched on before, the vaping crisis we're all familiar with in 2019, despite those challenges, the cannabis vape industry has had a really strong recovery and is positioned to thrive in 2021. So New Frontier data recently reported that since 2018, value-added products have gained in popularity and increasing proportion of consumers claim to consume both flower and non-flower products. Arnaud, do you expect this trend towards value-added products such as vapes to continue on the up and up?
Yeah, look at a lot of the traditional industries like retail, like electronics, like a lot of these industries have kind of converged toward custom experiences. I mean, we're all interested in having something unique. So we want something that works for us as individuals. And I think the only way that will arrive in cannabis is through more processed products, because you can more fine tune what's going on in those products. So if you want to make an association of chamomile, for instance, with verbena and add some terpenes and CBD in there, the entourage effect is going to make that you have a better chance for you personally to help with anxiety, for instance. For me, maybe it won't do anything. So the more products and the more variety of products we have on the market is going to grow, because the more each and every one of us are going to find the product that affects us the way we want it to affect us. I think that's really what's pushing a lot of the innovation in these companies. I mean, I speak to clients who are really looking at the interaction on the molecular level of certain cannabinoids with certain terpenes, with certain other compounds as well, that could really lead to breakthroughs in certain medical conditions, but also in certain mental conditions, because whether we like to hear it or not, for me, the recreational market can also be called the mental market. If we're consuming cannabis, it's because we want to feel better. Feeling better is mental. Or we want to feel more focused. That's mental. We want to be less tired and we want to sleep better. That's mental. So I like to talk about the mental market and the medical market. And really these products and the value-added products like vapes, for instance, will be able to pinpoint those. Why do you think in certain states, like the state we're in, New York, they don't even allow flower, they don't allow edibles, or historically they didn't allow flower or edibles, it was only vape. Why? Because we can control as an industry what goes into the vape, therefore we control what comes out. If we're relying only on the natural aspect of cannabis, you're gonna get huge variance from one batch to the other, whereas if you're controlling what goes inside, you're gonna have way less variance and be able to pinpoint certain formulations and certain value-added products.
John, would you agree with that? I know that our recent research supported that theory.
Yes, we would. And you see that happening actually as when you compare what's happening in the legal markets versus the illicit markets in the US. Based on the cannabis consumer survey that we did and the report that we released in April, one of the things that I thought was interesting is when you compare the frequency of use between the frequency of use of vapes between consumers who live in illegal markets versus legal markets. In illegal markets, it was 27% of consumers say they reported using vapes. In legal markets, it was 34%. And that gap has widened since we did this survey in 2018. I think part of the reason for that, to Arnaud's point, is this innovation, the product diffusion that is allowing for more tailored, more customized, more unique experiences, because the legal market, you know, has the resources to deploy that. And because generally you're finding a lower quality product available in the unregulated market, you're not seeing as rapid a pace of adoption. Indeed, in terms of the difference between legal versus illicit market use of any consumer product, vapes had about the widest gap. I think the largest gap was for topicals, which also makes a lot of sense. But vapes is right out there. And I think that speaks to the ability of the legal market to deliver a far superior experience. And then second, and this is, I think, a really critical point as we continue to fracture our idea of who the cannabis consumer is and why they're consuming. To Arnaud's point, the overwhelming majority of use, regardless of whether the consumer self-describes as medical or recreational, the overwhelming proportion of use is wellness related. And I think when you approach it from that standpoint, that people are trying to feel better, and I'll put better in quotes, whatever that means, or however they might define that, then it creates a huge kind of opportunity to both understand deeply what that means and then build products that are intended to address the kind of specific point of benefit that the consumer is trying to seek. In some respects, I actually think we barely scratched the surface of that product customization, that product tailoring. And some of that is going to be born of innovation in how we do extraction, how we constitute the compound, how we constitute the cannabinoids or the cannabis extracts in the vape pens. Some of that may be born of kind of additives, kind of vaporization safe additives that enhance the holistic effect of these vapes. But whatever the, however this ends up evolving, we think that the legal market is going to have a very, very strong advantage over the unregulated market. And two, we think this is going to be a sector that, as companies start to really dial in their products for specific applications, we think that the ability to, provide precise dosing via vape pen, some of the tech that's coming out now in terms of helping consumers track their use by mobile devices, it's just some really exciting developments that I think will only further strengthen the market opportunity for vaporizers in the years to come.
You know, it's so funny because you talk about all the different reasons. You were talking about the mental reasons and everything else. I feel like the more you read about cannabis and the uses and the different options, it's, sleep and relaxation and anxiety, but it's never really like to get high. You know, people aren't just trying to just get high anymore. It's more to feel better, which is, I feel like it's a far stretch from what people think about cannabis and the, the stigma associated with it.
As an industry, one of a fundamental question that for many years we've failed to ask, when consumers would say they consume to get high, we never asked why.
Why? Yeah, and, right? Because that's the real reason.
Where the opportunity lies. And it's a really exciting time because we're finally asking that question as an industry.
Yeah, it's really, I feel like that's just showing how we're maturing quickly. So it's great. Arnaud, what are some of, obviously the, outside the lack of research and resources to that, what are some of the primary challenges you see facing the vaping industry for 2021?
Well, I say you carved out outside of the research.
Well, because I know that we covered that so well, and you did such a great job.
Yeah, I think I can't insist enough that that's really the biggest aspect. I think another aspect is more of a business aspect, is the understanding that vaping is a system. It's not all about the oil or the concentrate or the live resin or the live rosin you put into a device. And it's not all about the device. It's about the interaction between the two. And until people understand that and understand that if you have one of these components that doesn't work, that's bad quality, then the combination of both will make it bad quality. It's not a zero sum game. And I think that's really one of the main points. And we can clearly see it in the different markets we work in, most importantly in the US and on the West Coast, California specifically, everyone is very price sensitive down to the cent. But that sometimes pushes producers to make bad choices and not do due diligence enough on the products that they're purchasing. It's also linked to the fact that, as we were alluding to earlier, these products are made in China. And I'm not going to belabor the point of China, because China does do most of the world's manufacturing, and they do a good job. It's about understanding who are the people and who are the raw material suppliers and who are the assemblers that do a good job. And that's that entire due diligence process is very often not done correctly and not pushed through by a lot of the players. And I think understanding that entire supply chain. So if I show you a cartridge, for instance, like this, a cartridge like this has 13 different raw materials inside. And I can tell you right now, you go ask any manufacturer, hey, do you have a standard certification for the stainless steel that you're using in your device? They'll have no damn clue. And I think that's one of the really important parts of understanding the global implications, not to mention that you have COVID and you have certain obstacles because of COVID. There's also other obstacles linked to supply chain. I mean, on the global economy right now, we have a shortage of SI chips, silicone chips. So all of the little chips that you have in batteries, you have your microwaves and your TVs and all of that. There's a major shortage right now. And the lead times for these components, which are usually 15 to 20 days maximum, are now up to 45, 50 days. If you don't control your supply chain, you don't know exactly how that's going to evolve, and you can't make reserves while the prices are low, because obviously the longer the lead time gets, the higher the prices will get, because people are going to be paying more for it. It's the same thing with battery cells, for instance. Right now, there's a shortage of battery cells. And understanding, again, that entire supply chain, not only on the hardware side, but understanding the supply chain when you're buying biomass and you're a processor, and understanding that whole supply over the next the coming weeks is very, very important. I think our industry is just too young and too immature yet to really understand the impact of supply chain issues, whether it's on the plant itself or the hardware.
John, anything to add as far as any challenges right now?
Well, just maybe picking up on Arnaud's point about how much of a critical role China plays in the US's vape economy. The vape industry, I think, is actually unique in that regard, in that most other products in the cannabis industry are sourced, manufactured, made locally, in the US at least, certainly within our national borders, broadly speaking. Whereas the vape market is one where, you know, there's critical reliance on our Asian suppliers. And so for operators who are looking at this market and looking at this market opportunity, that piece is really critical to understand. To Arnaud's point, I know a few people who've been really badly burned because, they thought they got a hot tip on a cheap deal on a manufacturer that was going to hook them up. And 2, 3, 4 months later, the money's gone, the products don't work, and they're back to square one. So there's an added level of diligence required, I think, in the vape market, because you're not dealing with domestically sourced commodities or resources. There's a significant and critical international component, and for those who have not navigated that ecosystem before, really, really critical that you've got good counsel guiding you through there, because it can be very murky waters.
It definitely is, and understanding China as well. I mean, you can't be doing business in China if you're not imbibed with the Chinese culture. We set up our operations in China and our team in China with mainly Chinese nationals that understand how all of this works. And there's a lot of kinks in the process. I mean, I'll give you a very funny story too, with purchasing managers of assemblers that you find on Alibaba. They will have two raw material suppliers, and they will literally tell them, and it's not taboo there, it's business as usual. They will literally tell them, hey, if you give me 1% of back in my pocket of what I'm ordering from you, I will choose you, even though you have a shittier product than the other supplier. You have to understand all of that. And if you're not in bed with it, if you don't have boots on the ground and you don't have your team in Shenzhen, because it's no further than Shenzhen, than China, it's really Shenzhen where all these products are produced, then you're not going to control anything. And control, as we know in supply chain, means reliability, means on-time delivery, means better management of what's going on.
Wow. That's incredible. Well, we are almost out of time, but before we go, want to get your predictions, outlook for the future, what's to come, expectations. Arno, what do you think is going to be coming down the pipe?
I like to draw a parallel again with nicotine vaping. In nicotine vaping, every year there was a new potential crisis. At one point, it was batteries exploding. At one point, it was, there's too much vanillin in this flavor, which is a carcinogenic substance when inhaled. It's going to be a roller coaster. There are going to be ups and downs. We're at one point in the U.S., we were all using MCT as a diluent for the oils. MCT is really dangerous, and that was kind of under the radar because there were no reported incidents. But we're not too far away from potentially seeing that pop up. Maybe we're going to see that a certain kind of terpene like limonene, if used over a certain percentage, is going to become dangerous. And we're going to have to address this in standards, and the regulators are going to have to implement it. But we won't find out until we do research. So I'm going to start sounding like a broken record now, spending money in research. And I do think that is one thing that we're going to see a little bit more of in this year. And I've been speaking to a lot of people that are starting some research pieces across North America. And most recently, a couple of weeks ago, there were more research growing licenses that were granted by the U.S. I mean, up until now, it was only Mississippi. So now there's two more, and we need to be pushing for getting more of that information out there and pushing for really science-backed data instead of just fear-mongering and making regulations on a whim without basing them in science. So we're going to see a lot more of that, and we're going to see a lot more innovation and innovative products and people that actually spend the time doing research before putting out a product. Because up until now, it's literally, hey, I have an idea. I'm going to go get a prototype made really quick. And if three people tell me it works, I'm putting it on the market. That's going to start to simmer down as the industry matures and stabilizes.
Right. John, what's your outlook?
I think Arno has covered that beautifully. And the imperative of research, specifically around the vapes, I think is critical because of the type of innovation that's happening around the cannabis extracts that we've never really seen before. This idea of disaggregating the oils and reconstituting them, in some cases, in quantities that we have as human society have never ingested before. So I think the limonene example is a perfect one. We don't know what happens once you start ingesting these things that occur in nature in really microscopic quantities and significantly greater ones. But I think ultimately the science will find the appropriate thresholds. Just as an outlook specifically for the vape market and the opportunity that we're seeing going into the second half of 2021, one aspect of the market that I think is quite interesting is this idea that if for much of American society has been in some form of lockdown or at least reduced outdoor or out of house activity for the past 18 months. We think that's part of the reason why, you know, you may have seen a bit of a dip in the share of vapes relative to flower as people were, you know, able to be home more and smoke more, et cetera. I think one of the things we are likely to see as we come out of the pandemic, as we return to social society, is renewed interest in these more discreet, more out-of-home friendly consumption products. And so we think that this could be a really good season for the vape market as Americans get back out into social society and now are able to do that at a time when there's never been a richer kind of portfolio of vapes and other kind of discrete product forms for them to resume social society with. So I'm expecting we're going to be seeing a lot of vapes at barbecues and dinner parties this year.
I just like the sound of barbecues and dinner parties. That sounds really exciting. Well, thank you both so much for being on here today. It was amazing. I feel like we could talk for hours, but we have to wrap it up. So thank you to our listeners at CannaWeek. Please be sure to like, subscribe, hit the notification bell. And if you really like us, give us 5 stars. And we have just released our most recent report, Cannabis in the U.S. 2021 Mid-Year Market Report. We put that out in partnership with a global law firm, Dentons, as our sponsor. Just head on over to newfrontierdata.com and hit on industry reports. I am your host, Heather Wickline, and we will see you next time.
New Frontier Data provides this podcast for entertainment purposes only. Nothing stated in this podcast should be taken as legal or financial advice. Reference to any specific product or entity does not constitute an endorsement or recommendation by the company. The views expressed by guests are their own, and their appearance on the program does not imply an endorsement of them or any entity they represent. Views and opinions expressed by New Frontier Data employees are those of the employees and do not necessarily reflect the view of the company or any of its officials. If you have any questions about this disclaimer, please contact our legal department.